This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. Now, Doug, I'm the guy who I will drink hot coffee every day, like hot coffee every single day. But like I stepped outside this morning and it's still so muggy that I have to drink my hot coffee in air conditioning. Like it's almost so hot outside that I don't want to drink my hot coffee anymore. So I don't know. I don't know what that says about me, but that's how hot it is this week.
Yeah. You need a couple ice cubes in that coffee today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never been an iced coffee guy. Are you an iced coffee guy at all?
I'm not.
I just envision my grandpa disowning me if I ever drank an iced coffee. I don't know why. Cool, man. So we've had you on a handful of times already in the past couple months, and the conversations between us just keep rolling and rolling. And so you're on again today to BS. We're going to talk a little bit about getting access, not necessarily access routes, but getting access to farms, permission, things like that. But before we get into that, dude, this week is going to be blazing hot. And I'm always just kind of thinking like, dude, what are these animals doing throughout the day aside from just sitting in some shade somewhere baking to death?
Yeah, it's miserable here. It's in the 90s all week, gonna hit like 110 heat index. I don't know if you can hear them. There's a rooster right outside my window right now. We have chickens. Okay. And I felt so bad for them. I put ice in their water.
Oh boy. Boy, that means you love them. You know what I mean? I also heard chickens are really susceptible to heat if they don't have like wind moving, and if they don't have wind and they don't have shade and things like that, and their water is too warm or things like that. I heard that they can go downhill real fast.
Yeah. We let them free range around the house. We've got a bunch of pine trees. I'll catch them underneath my truck hiding out, and so they can get out, move around, get cool, and plenty of water out.
Yeah. I'll say this. Do you live on a farm?
It's an old farmhouse on 3.5 acres, but we don't have a farm, no.
Okay. All right. So I grew up on a farm, and like you mentioned, things hiding places. I don't know why cats decide to have their babies in like the dumbest spots, like in the fans of tractors and like right in among the belts and things like that. Or they make some kind of nest, or have they bring their cats up into some like engine manifold, or I don't know why, but dude, this sounds horrible, but every like fall, or like either a planting season or during the harvest season, there would be like dead cats all over my grandpa's farm, because they would have kittens in these spots where all the farm equipment was at, or they would tuck themselves up underneath some engine or belt or something like that. And like there'd be dead animals. I don't know why I'm talking about this, but like there'd be like dead animals all over the place on his farm lot because of that.
Mine's groundhogs. We have a mini barn that they tried to live under, and then one tried to move in under the deck, and they had to be evicted.
Oh, okay. So that was less accident, more purposeful.
Correct. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen like skunks dig holes, and then my grandpa like has to shoot them out. My grandpa would shoot them out of the bedroom window. So like he would see rabbits in his garden, or he would see skunks digging under a barn or something like that. So he had like this northwest bedroom, and then one window faced the garden. The other one would face like the machine sheds, and like, You'd just be chilling in the house, and all of a sudden you'd hear kaboom out the window. And my grandma would have a heart attack. What are you doing? He's like, oh, they've got another rabbit trying to eat our vegetables. Or, you know, this coon was in the, you know, trying to dig underneath of something. Or, oh, God, it just hilarious. I look back at moments like that, and I just laugh my ass off at, you know, all the stuff that would go down on the farm.
I learned how to trap out here. I think I've gotten like 3 raccoons this year. Yeah. We have barn cats that my wife is rather attached to.
Okay.
And so raccoons started coming around eating the cat food. And I was like, well, this isn't going to go well between that and the chickens. Yeah. So I learned to trap out of my yard.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to, that's something that I wouldn't mind teaching my boys. That's something that, and I would love to learn, would be the whole trapping thing. And I think there's something really cool about it, like really mountain man-ish to be able to trap and things like that. But also, I don't necessarily know what it teaches you about animal movement and things like that. But I do know that this is no joke. The most overpopulated animal in North America is the raccoon. And, there's too many of them on the landscape. They need to go. And they, you know, especially on farms. I actually had a buddy one year who told me that he trapped 250 raccoons, or not my buddy, a guy I know. He trapped 250 raccoons over the course of 1 year. And he said that the next year his turkey population exploded, and his ground nesting birds like pheasants and quail and, turkeys all exploded on his farms because of that. Now imagine trying to keep up with that, like coyotes, right? Guys who are always trying to like remove coyotes from their properties, or raccoons, or like skunks, possums, things like that. That would be almost another full-time job to try to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I coyote for me is an opportunity animal. I'm out and it comes by, I'll sling an arrow or try and shoot it. I have had zero luck purposely coyote hunting and getting one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's see, what are we going to do today? We're going to talk about permission. Before we do that, I got to send a huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And, that's going to be, hang on, I gotta check the date here. Okay, so this is gonna launch July 1st. And we here at the Nine Finger Chronicles are introducing 2 new partners to the lineup here that starting this month and this year. And so the first one, I'm gonna give you some introduction into some of these companies. Vapor Trail Arrow Rests. I'm gonna tell you a little quick story, Doug, about how I kind of got into Vapor Trail and using their arrow rest, and then essentially like putting it on my bow. I had another arrow rest company that I was absolutely thrilled with. I've been using it for several years. That company got sold to one of those bigger conglomerate type, you know, like a holding company that holds a whole bunch of different brands. And the quality, in my opinion, went down, and it started seizing up on me. It started like my accuracy was going down because my that rest was hitting the fletchings, and a whole bunch of different things were going wrong with it. And I was like, gee, many Christmas. And I had a guy go, hey, dude, you need to try Vapor Trail. And it was the first time I ever went to a limb driven system. And since then, I have been shooting Vapor Trail arrow rests for a long time. Love the limb driven system, love the products. And I'm that guy who, if it works, I'm going to keep using it. And so we've decided to go into a partnership together. And so if you're looking for some badass, high quality arrow rest, go check out Vapor Trail. Vapor Trail's vaportrail.com. So go check that out. Next on the list is Ozonics. Now, before everybody here shits their pants and says things like, oh God, ozone doesn't work. You just got to play the wind and all that stuff. That's fine. You guys can think however you want. I've been using an Ozonics for several years for a lot of different reasons. And it has the in the tree application. It has the at deer camps functionality as well, where I put my clothes through an ozone bath, which means I have to wash them less throughout the hunting season. In the tree, I've seen it do some amazing things downwind, where when deer get downwind, and whether they notice it's there or they don't. One thing that they're not noticing is the potency of my scent. And so it's just one of those things where once I've seen it work one time, and it's worked a ton of times for me when deer get downwind to me, because eventually that's going to happen in the woods. I'm just like, dude, like, I'm going to take this thing in the tree with me. I'm going to soak my clothes in the ozone, and I'm going to just continue to use it because I'm confident in it. So you're going to be hearing more about Ozonics, that brand, from me in the future as well. So they're another new partner, along with all of our other standard partners here. We got Wasp Archery. If you're looking for, in my opinion, some of the best made broadheads on the market, most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States, go check out wasparchery.com. We have Vortex Optics. I mean, we're getting ready to hop into that summer, the velvet season, really quickly here. And so I have my spotting scope, and I have my binoculars. My binoculars are on my chest when I'm driving down the road now. And people probably think I'm a nut job, just like pulling over to the side of the road and glassing in properties that I'll never have permission to hunt. But I'm still like, dude, what's this dude doing? Is he trying to trespass? Nope. I'm looking at your velvet bucks, sir. So it's something fun to do with the kids, man. I absolutely love it. So go check out vortexoptics.com. Next on the list, Code Blue Sense. We have a continued partnership with Code Blue this year, and absolutely love their Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. They have scent elimination products like the body washes and things like that, and the laundry detergents. Outside of that, they have the Real and Synthetic Deer Urines, the Mock Scrape Kit, like I mentioned. A lot of cool products that I use throughout the entire season as well. And then last but not least, Tacticam, dude. I had it. It never fails. Every single year, my job, Doug, is to get trail cameras out on there so I can start seeing the velvet, put out the mineral. And this was the week. This was the week to do it. But it's 135 degrees outside. And so my old ass is going, nope, like, pass. I'll just do it next week or the week. But then now I'm starting to run into like 2 weeks of state baseball where I have to travel. And then I got to try to fit in a trip to Illinois, and I have to try to, not for hunting, but for work. And then I got to go fit in another, try to fit in a trip down to I got two farms, right? So it's just one of those things where it's just like, I don't think I got my trail cameras out until August or even September last year. And I'm way behind, and I don't want to be behind, but I also don't want to drive 6 hours in one, you know, 6 or 7 hours in one day to hang up three trail cameras. So whatever. Anyway, tacticam.com/cameras. Go check out their new cameras that are going to drop here in August. So stand by for that. All right. Doug, do you have your trail cameras out?
Some of them.
Some of them.
I'm in the same boat. I meant to most of May. Didn't get out. June's just been super busy. Mm-hmm. And so I might go Sunday, July 5th, to finally get some out.
Yeah.
The ones I have out now are the ones that kind of stay out year round.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what dude, I'm going to tell you right now, there's going to be some things that Reveal are going to be launching here pretty soon where I don't even know if I'm supposed to talk about it, but like, you may not even need to change your trail cameras ever. Like, just put them in the right spot, point them in a direction, and then just whether it's a solar panel or their battery life or rechargeable batteries or whatever is going to happen. Like it's one of those things where you might not even ever need to go in and change it as long as they work and the batteries keep charging and things like that. So that's pretty nuts, man. Cause I remember when I was first started running trail cameras, I couldn't contain myself. Like I had to go in and like, especially during the hunting season, if I wasn't going into some good spots and bumping does or even bucks out to check trail cameras, most of the time I would try to hunt my way in. I'd check a trail camera, but I'd also hunt it. But I was doing that once every 2 or 3 days at max a week. But now with cell cams, dude, you don't need to do that anymore as long as you have cell service.
Yeah, those are a huge game changer. And I've got some spots where the cell cam can't reach.
Yeah.
Unless you could run up a 50-foot antenna. But yeah, it definitely gives me less pressure on certain spots of the woods.
Yeah, for sure. I wonder how many guys are doing that. Jerry rigging some kind of like device in some river bottom or backwoods piece where there's no cell service, but they decided they're going to climb up 80 foot into a tree and put in an antenna to get it. You know, I bet you there's dudes out there that do it.
Oh, there's got to be a couple of hillbillies somewhere that are doing it.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Permission. 20 years ago. Shit. 20 years ago. That's 2006. And that's like the peak of the big, in my opinion, Illinois, Iowa, we're coming off of the peak of like this big giant buck era where there's just hammers getting dropped. The hunting hasn't become like the pay to play type environment yet. I was able to knock on doors and dude, I had thousands and thousands. I had so much ground back in 2006 to, you know, between when I was in high school, like 97 to 2006, where I had too much ground to hunt, too much good ground to hunt. There's no way you could do it. And that was back before I was running all these trail cameras. So I'd had no clue on the quality of deer that were running around, and things changed, right? Something changed. And now the community and the industry have taken a hold of it. And now it's harder to find private land to get permission on. I want you to talk a little bit about your experience with door knocking, with getting permission, with the evolution of getting permission from, you know, when you started knocking on doors to today.
I've definitely had to change my strategy. Just the way I present myself, the way I look. I don't give a false presentation. I'm 100% myself. You know, I no longer like shorts and sandals, trying to wear some kind of pants and a shoe or a boot, clean t-shirt at least. But most of my permission has come through knowing somebody. It may not be that person's land, but they recommend me to go to the neighbor. But just to cold knock on a door and then to say yes, it's so difficult, especially right now with, you know, leasing companies and stuff like that, when people are making a business out of it, when they can go in and say, hey, I'm going to lease your property for you, year-round rights or even just deer hunting rights, and I'll give you X amount of money. It's tough for somebody, and I'm even willing to pay a little bit or do some land work, offer them some venison. It's tough around me. In the last week, I've knocked on a dozen doors. I have to go back to four of them. The others have been thanks, but no thanks, or we're taking the grandkids out. A whole lot of, well, my son-in-law runs it now, so go to him. And he's like, yeah, sorry, we're full.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's just a lot, like, I'm not sure what the cause of it is, right? Because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that, hunting license sales are going down, but it's harder to get permission on some of these places. And so what's happening, in my opinion, is that hunters are taking up more acres for one hunter. Like, so one guy is going, hey, dude, there's a hammer. There's a giant on this property. I'm not letting anybody hunt this property anymore. It's just me and my boy or whatever. When there used to be like two bow hunters on it and then a shotgun crew that would come into it. And I'm talking about Iowa, but just the people know now, they know the quality of deer and you know, they know what's on it. Everybody wants bigger bucks. And so how do you get big bucks? You don't let people hunt your farm and shoot two-year-olds anymore, right? You remove people from the property and you get, you hoard it to yourself, hoard it or whatever, you keep it to yourself, whatever it is. Also, what's happened, and this is my opinion, I'd love to, you know, hear what you have to say, is the generation that owned the property before you didn't care about deer hunting as much. Maybe they hunted, but they didn't care about it. So if you were a good person, you could come on and hunt. The next generation of the landowner saw the value in leasing or selling, or they themselves saw with a technology change, the ability to know what's on the farm. Therefore, the parents didn't want to deal with it anymore. So they pass all the access down to their kids. Yeah, you take care of it or whatever. And then they're telling people no, right? What have you seen throughout the years?
I've seen a lot of the same. The first door I knocked on this year, guy had a decent mix of ag and woods and a couple different properties throughout the county. And I was just trying to get a spot to bow hunt.
Yeah.
Knocked on his door. He said he didn't hunt, and his brother controls all, you know, all the access and allowing people. And so I was kind of like, okay, he doesn't hunt. Maybe I can, you know, talk to his brother. And I talked to his brother. And even before I left, I was like, does your brother allow other people to hunt? And he was like, yeah, other people come in. So I got like really excited, and go and talk to the brother. And I introduce myself, kind of go through my spiel, you know, hey, I'm just looking for a place to archery hunt. And he just kind of grins and goes, follow me. And we walk into this garage and there's just mounts all over it. And he was like, yeah, we do, but I do more of like trading hunts. You know, we trade spots, a lot of out of state. And, you know, we got to talk, we talked for 30 or 40 minutes. And then he's like, yeah, I lease or have permission on a lot of the ground around here. And so it was just like a kick to the balls. Yeah. You know, that one guy had all that locked up. Another thing I've run into with that older generation is that they've kind of been burned by it before.
100%.
They set kind of the standards or the rules for people who come and hunt it, and just some people didn't respect it. You know, they didn't want tree stands left year round or in the way or not to do, you know, X, Y, and Z or park your truck in a certain spot, and people just didn't care. I've had several people who are like, sorry, we've had a bad experience. We don't want people hunt anymore. That's probably the toughest pill to swallow, is that nobody gets the opportunity to use it because somebody ruined it.
Yeah. I've lost properties, really good properties before, where the farmer, I knocked on his door and he goes, I have one rule. Don't drive on my pasture when it's wet. That was the only rule this guy had. You could do whatever else you wanted on his. There was another group of guys in on that farm. Shot a deer when it was wet. They drove back there. It left big ruts in his pasture. He kicked everybody out of the farm. Everybody, even his own family. He's like, I had one rule. You guys broke it. Done. Everybody got kicked out of that farm. And so that's a perfect example of, like not people just disrespecting or not treating it like it's their own, right?
Yeah.
Man, over the years, I've installed satellite dishes to help out. I've fixed fence, installed gates. I've taken ruts, like I've taken my own shovel and have fixed ruts that other people have left in there because the landowner was pissed. And I just said, you know what? Let me take care of it. I'll take care of it for you, right? I've dropped off venison to landowners, fish that I've caught. I keep in constant contact with them throughout the course of the year, basically just saying, dude, I am so thankful for you because without you, like, I don't know where I'm going to hunt, right? Because of the environment that we're all in. And so it's just really, I feel like people get burnt too. The other one, here's another example. I used to have a farm, and over the winter time there, it was a river bottom ground. And so the river would freeze and then the snowmobilers would come through on it. Well, a guy came through on a snowmobile. He cut across her property, without permission, and he got hurt. I think he drove into a fence. And the insurance company told this guy, you have to sue the landowner in order for us to fulfill your insurance claim or something along those lines. And so he had to sue her. And guess what she did? Nobody on the property anymore. Right? Because of this one guy trespassing. He wasn't even a hunter. Right? And so they have to protect themselves and their property. And so what do? You just get rid of people.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people be concerned because, you know, the liability of just having somebody on there. And I'm like, look, I have my own private insurance. I have like outdoorsman insurance, and I will put it in writing that if something happens, it's 100% my fault. You know, exactly. I know what trees to go up. I know, you know, shot angles and stuff like that. Like I will. Indiana, the DNR actually has a waiver that the landowner can have signed where they're released from all liability.
Right. So kind of like I give permission, like a template, right? Like I give permission to so-and-so to be on my property or, you know, I hereby waive all liability from injury for you or whatever the wording is on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, you know me and I love eating wild game. But I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef. And that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com. So here's, you talked about looking presentable when you go to the farms. You want to know something crazy that that worked really well for me? I used to go in a clean hat, clean shirt, a pair of jeans with a pair of tennis shoes, a clean pair of tennis shoes or a clean pair of boots, and knock on doors. One thing that I found was that if I looked dirty and I looked like I had put in a hard day of work, like I would go do my landscaping job back in the day and I would be filthy, dirt on my pants, dirt on my shirt, sweaty hat, you know, looking maybe sunburnt, dirty boots. And I would go knock on doors. I would have a better chance getting permission back in the day when looking like that, because they felt, I'm guessing it's subconsciously, they're farmers, they're landowners, they put in a hard day's work. This guy just did the same exact thing, and maybe he's looking for a place to hunt. Not like, here's some pretty boy who is only on my property just to go chase a big buck or whatever the case is. So I always had better results when looking dirty and like I just worked 10 hours of a day, which I did, and then go knock on the doors on a weekday as opposed to looking good on a Saturday or Sunday knocking on their door.
I've thought about that. Just kind of going after I mow the lawn or after I've been working in the garden, just whatever I was wearing, sweat drenched, and just go knock on some. Another thing that people seem to have more, they have better chance of getting is younger people.
Oh, yeah.
I turned 40 this fall, and I feel like I may have missed that opportunity to be like, you know, I'm just a 25-year-old. I don't have the opportunity to own land or whatever. Yeah. I know a couple guys that have done well playing the youth card.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, honestly, so in previous conversations that I've had on the podcast, you know, I've talked about me kind of getting worried about where my boys are going to hunt, where my kids are going to hunt. And so I'm thinking I'm going to start taking them with me, because honestly, I don't necessarily care about myself anymore. I'm just trying to get them on some additional ground. And like, what sucks is I don't have any hunting property other than public around here to hunt. And I would love to try to find some ground closer to where I live where I can bring my boy and do some deer hunting. Like, because he's not going to play football this year. I would love, and I'm not going to coach, so I would love to just like pop him out for an afternoon hunt someday and have him go shoot a deer or something like that. And, but all of my farms are over an hour away or more. So I don't have that ability to get out there and just pop into a piece. And there's a little bit of security on a piece of private that I don't feel I have on a piece of public, you know. And I'm sure there's horror stories on public. People have, like, dude, I have bullets whizzing by my head, and, or, you know, somebody gets into an argument or something like that. And I'm not opposed to, you know, going out to public because it's readily available. I'm just, private just seems a little bit more controlled than public does. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've brought up my son before. You know, I'd be like, yeah, you know, I just want to be able to, you know, be close. You know, when the sun goes down, I can still be home in time, you know, help put him to bed or whatever. I haven't taken him with me to door knock. Maybe that tipped the scales.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about this? And maybe this would be too much, but a lot of towns have, like the town that I live in has a Facebook page. And that Facebook page is like for anything from garage sales to like, hey, the power's out. Anybody having issues with their water, anything like that. And so I'm curious if it would be worth posting a picture of my son, maybe even myself, and just making a, hey, we are looking for property to come hunt. We're not picky. We just want the opportunity to shoot some deer. If you're willing to have a conversation with us about that, feel free to, you know, send me a DM or reach out to me. I would love to have the conversation about that. Do you think that would be too much exposure, or that would be something that would be worth it?
I think like everything on Facebook, it would have mixed reactions.
Yeah.
I've seen people do it in outdoor groups. Mm-hmm. And in those, you know, all those people are outdoorsy. They're looking to give people, you know, at least the next generation an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen some give up public hunting land spots. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they reach out, hey, you know, if you want your son to come hunt, he can come shoot a deer here. you know, as long as you're with them. I know like our town chatter, I don't know. I personally wouldn't post it on that. I'd be more likely to post it on like an outdoor group, you know, an Indiana outdoor group or a certain area.
Yeah. I always thought that maybe that would work, but that at the same time, then people would know, right? And then if you somehow got permission and someone else didn't, then that person maybe knew them longer and goes, dude, I didn't know you were letting people hunt. And then so they have 1 year of it, and then someone else comes in, takes that spot, and now either more people or I don't know, something along those lines, that, you know, where it just gets complicated and maybe people know too much. And I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking it, but the other thing that, let me ask you a question. You knock on the door and they say no, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you go back to that farm or that landowner the next year, and ask if there's an opening or permission or anything?
So I typically don't end the conversation at no. I'll say, you know, can I leave my number in case something changes?
Yeah.
Or, you know, if I already kind of know them, hey, you know, reach out. I'll ask for shed hunting permission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, does anybody shed hunt? Do you mind if I stop by in January? If you don't mind, and I can shed hunt in the spring. I've got a lot of people that say, stop back by in January and we'll see about shed hunting permission. And that's a great way just to get your foot in the door. They get to know you a little bit better, get comfortable with you. And I'm not opposed to, you know, sharing antlers, or at least showing them the antlers, you know, and talking about them. A lot of people, at least in my area, it's an aging generation. I have a feeling a lot of the farms around here in the next 5-8 years are going to end up for sale if they don't get passed down to the family.
Yep.
And so a lot of those people, like one of the guys is 85 years old. He grew up in the same 1 square mile area. He just wants to talk to somebody. So I talked to him for half an hour.
Yeah.
Still didn't get permission, but I know he enjoyed it. He was struggled to get the door. And by the time I left, he was smiling.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of what makes me feel good about doing it as well, even if I get a no.
Yeah. There was one time I knocked on a door close to my hometown, and I actually went to high school with their grandson. So I knocked on the door, had a conversation with them. They found out through, you know, question answer that who I was and that I went to high school with their grandson. They invited me in. They fed me, right? They're like, would you like to stay for supper? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay. So I was there for an hour and a half talking to them, just talking about a whole bunch of things, about their farm, about deer hunting, turkey hunting, all this stuff. And then so hour and a half goes by. At the end of it, they told me no. And I'm just like, that was a lot of time invested for a no. And so, and then I just, you know, didn't go back ever again, you know, because of that. But on the flip side of that, the farm that I have access to now started at shed hunting. Hey, do you mind if I come shed hunt your property? Yeah, you can. Hey, do you mind if I come turkey hunt your property the next year? Yep. You know, okay. Then by that time, the landowner understood who I was. I'm a nice guy. I have no ill intentions. And then it was archery hunting, right? You can come and bow hunt. And so it took me 3 years of coming back, getting a little bit of access at a time, until I got the whole farm for deer hunting. And so I've done that. There's another farm that, this was a long time ago, where I was told no, but it was almost like he was teasing me at the end. He's like, well, check back with me next year. We'll see what happens. No. Check. Yeah. Hey, you again, huh? You think you're going to hunt my farm this year? Almost as a joke. And, I'm like, hey man, you tell me to keep coming back. I'm going to keep coming back. So like in the summertime, I'd stop by. And 1 year, I don't know why, I saw in the bed of his truck, he had an empty can of Budweiser. Now, maybe he picked it up off the road, or maybe it was his. So I knew that year, or that I knew something a little bit about him.
So I bought a six pack of Budweiser and I put it in a cooler and I was driving around having a beer, right? You know, don't tell my mom, whatever. But I saw him out in the field. I pulled in and he looks at me and shakes his head. I go, "It's hot, bud. You want something cold to drink?" And he's like, "What do you got?" And so I gave him a Budweiser and his eyes lit up. And so, we drank a Budweiser together. And then he told me no again, but the next year I came back, I got a yes out of him. And so we built this relationship. Eventually, he had to go to a nursing home, over the years. And his kids took over and said no, and farm eventually got sold. But those were the things that I was willing to do to get permission to hunt on those farms. It's almost like real estate sales or investing, like, you know, it's essentially you're selling yourself to get on a piece of property.
Yeah, this will be year four that I go back to the same person. I can shed hunt it. The first year she told me, she was like, "You know, I don't get to talk to many people, you know, keep stopping by." I took her morel mushrooms. She would pick up sheds out of her yard and like have them at the door for me. She was like, "Oh, here, I found this week," and would hand it to me. Still don't have hunting permission yet, but just that persistent, you know, keep showing up, be consistent. Are you ever nervous about going into the field while the farmer's working to talk to him? That's something I haven't pulled the trigger on yet.
That's a great question. If they're in the tractor, I'll drive by. If they're out of the tractor, like if it looks like they're really working, but man, here's what I'll say is you don't get very many opportunities to catch them at a house. When it's almost, I would rather catch the farmer or the landowner while they're working in the middle of something than them getting home. And all they want to do at the end of a hard day is just sit and relax. And then some dumbass comes and knocks on their door. Right. And then they're just like, Jesus, like all I want to do is sit down and watch the news. Right. Or sit down and eat supper. And so I would rather catch them in the middle of the day doing something. The one day, there was a guy and I said to myself, "Dude, you just got to go." He was fixing a fence for his hogs. And so I pulled in, got out of my truck, walked straight to him. And he's like, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Looks like you need a hand," right? Cause he was trying to hold this big long board. And he's like, "Yeah, I'll take it." And so, you know, I held the one post and he nailed it in. And then he came over here and nailed it in. Something very simple, right? And so that got me in on that farm. That little bit right there where, it, you know, he looks busy. I drive by. I never talk to him. I just caught him at the right moment. And, dude, I've gotten permission from, like, driving down the road. And a cow is in out of the fence. It's in the road. And so I drive down the road. I knock on the door and I say, "Hey, I think you got some cattle out on the road. Do you want me to help you get them in?" And so he got on his four wheeler, drove down the road. I turned my truck sideways in the car to block him from going. And then he kind of looped them back and got him into a gate and got access that way. So just always like finding ways to help people, if that makes sense. And to answer your question, over the years, when I saw the opportunity, immediately I would take it. I wouldn't try to get them at home. I wouldn't try to drive by because I was nervous. I just went with the moment that I had the opportunity and I usually took it.
It's tough when it's the first one, either the first one of the day or the first one of the season. It's almost like that first date energy buildup. But as soon as you knock on that first door, even if it's a quick no, it's like, okay, now we can keep going. I'm kind of in the flow. It's like playing a sport and the first time you get popped, you know, the first hit in football or kind of the first time you get headbutted in wrestling. It's like, okay, I got to pay attention here. You know, it's
Yeah.
It's going. Yeah,
absolutely. And where do you think that, so like any type of phone call, I've gotten access by calling before too, but I've also found out that it's easier for them to say no over the phone than actually showing up and talking to them in person. Sometimes people, you know, like they're people pleasers and they don't want to, you know, it's easy for someone to say no over a phone or just hang up. But if you're in their face and maybe you have a rebuttal and you're starting to talk to them, it's just like, hey, can I bow hunt your property? No. Okay. Goodbye. It's always, you can't just go in and just go, I want this. Will you let me? No. Goodbye. You always be like, dude, how's your yield looking this year? Or how, you know, like, do you get all your crops in on time? Or, you know, hey, how many head of cattle are you running? Or, you know, like, it's just like a little bit of a conversation. And then you go, hey, well, one of the reasons I stopped by today was, to see if, and they're not dumb anymore. They know that you know how many acres they own. They know how many, cause I played that card one time. And I go, hey, I'm just kind of curious. Do you know you own any property around here that I could mule deer hunt in South Dakota? And the guy goes, hey, I'm not stupid. You have all that information on your phone, right? And then he yelled at me for about 10 minutes while I walked backwards off his property in my truck, because this guy's, he was a wacko, right? And so they know that you know, right? And so don't play stupid or dumb. Just, you know, little small talk to them about who hunts their property, ask them, you know, would you be willing to give me any type of hunting permission? And you know, they're going to say yes or no. Right. So, but like you said, I really liked what you said. Don't ever end at no, and then turn around and walk away. Always try to leave it like open ended.
Right. Yeah. And when I started, I always ask, you know, do you own the woodlot over there, or do you own it? Just to confirm, because I've knocked on doors and gotten, you know, 5-6 minutes into it just to find out they're renting the house. Mm-hmm. You know, the GIS or, you know, Onyx or Hunt Stand or whatever you're using hasn't updated yet, and they're just running the house. And I'm like, well, do you know how I can reach the owner? You know, where are they local? Can I get a number? Stuff like that.
Yep. And then usually on Onyx, so there's multiple addresses, right? So there's the address of the farm they might have lived in. Usually what happens is if it's a landowner where it's in a trust, that house is probably being rented potentially. So then there's a tax ID address on Onyx. And so that one is usually where the actual landowner lives. And sometimes if it's an older person, they have moved into town. So that's the door that I go and knock on in the city or the town, and just be like, hey, I'm sorry to bother you, but, you know, I know you, it says that your name is on this property and blah, 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 blah. And then you start that conversation with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, it's like doing some homework. I don't know, right, you know, exactly. If you ever do a Google search on them just to see, you know, get a little bit like not stalkerish, but just enough to get some info, you know, who are you dealing with? You know, am I going to walk up to a guy that has 6 felonies? I might want to skip that property, you know, or an older gentleman, a younger couple, you know, what am I dealing with?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I stalk them. I'll be completely honest. I look up everything about them. If I know, I'm just like, who's this person? Put it in, you know, find their address. What do they do for a living? Okay. He's an attorney. Okay. Well, if he's an attorney or a white collar guy, he probably bought this property, and you can look through tax records to see when it was purchased and sold. And when this guy became owner. Okay. Well, he bought it. He's the deer hunter, right? Maybe not. And then that's where maybe an email address, an email will come into play, especially. The other one is if they're a non-resident landowner, then most of the time, you know, or if there's a tower blind in the field that you can see, or if there's a manicured food plot that you can see from the road, more than likely I'm driving by that and I'm not even going to waste my time on it because, you know, but I've been wrong before too. So, you know, oh, I only shotgun hunt it. Yeah, feel free to bow hunt my property. But it's changed, right? Like the 1 year when I moved to the town that I live in, when I moved here, I spent 2 days knocking on doors. It was a Saturday and a Sunday. I stopped at 22 different locations and I got told no 22 times. The 23rd door knock led me to 101 acres.
Nice.
And I found out that everybody had permission to hunt it because the landowner was like, yeah, you kill all the deer. Right. And there were some good deer there. There were some really good deer, at that, on that property, but there was also 50 deer hunters on that property as well. So it might as well have been public. So what are you hearing from, you know, I haven't done a lot of door knocking in recent years. What are you hearing? What's the conversation like with landowners these days? What are you hearing? Are there trends to the yes or the no, or it's leased, or I got grandkids now that are doing it? What are you hearing?
It's a mix of lease. You know, they go through one of those leasing companies. You know, if you name it, they're in the area, especially if it's a bigger chunk, anything over probably 100 acres. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of grandkids. I'd say two-thirds of the doors I've docked on and was told no, it was, well, you know, we're taking the grandkids out, or the grandkids are going to go sit. Mm-hmm. You know, and we don't want other people in there just for their safety.
Yep. Yep. And so do you have a rebuttal to that, saying, well, like, hey, listen, I would be willing to do a late season muzzleloader when it gets real cold and nasty and the grandkids don't want to go out. Like, do you have a rebuttal, or do you just say okay to that?
I always say I'm just looking for archery, mm-hmm. the opportunity, whether it's early or late. You know, if you guys are okay with me putting out cameras, I'm more than happy to share all those. You know, kids love looking through those. I can even leave the SD card. You guys can go through them whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And if you see a deer that you don't want me to shoot, I won't shoot it. You know, if you only want me to take a doe, I'll take a doe. You know, if you're good with me taking whatever, I'll take whatever. You know, just leave it very open-ended so it's not a hard no, and then kind of put the ball in their court. You know, hey, you make the rules, I'll play by them.
Yeah. 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 The grandkids or family, yeah, I already have family who hunts it, is a hard one because they don't want to make their family members mad. So I've been able to, like, I kind of stay away from that. But if someone says I already have other hunters on this property, then I start to dig a little deeper and like, what seasons? Oh, I'm only interested in archery hunting. I don't care about gun hunting. They can have the gun season. So I won't be interrupting anything that they do. Oh, okay. And what happens is, have you ever gotten permission on a farm where the farmer or the landowner thought that maybe you or one other person was the only person on that property, and come to find out there's multiple other hunters on the farm that the landowner did not know about?
We've run into trespassers before.
Yeah.
And like gave them a heads up and they're like, yeah, the neighbor's known to do that. And they just straight up say, don't even call us, call DNR, call the police, trespass them. But yeah, they're even knocking on doors now. Like, even if they tell me no, and, you know, I go through, you know, my post no, you know, talk or whatever, they're like, I appreciate you asking. I was like, and I always say, you know, it's not my property. I need to ask. And they're like, not everybody does. You know, they know that there's people in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I've hunted on farms where the landowner did not want to cause any type of ruckus. And they're just like, well, you know, I don't want any problems. They've probably been hunting there for, you know, 19 years or whatever the number is. I had a property that my best friend's grandpa owned. Okay. This was years ago. And I got permission to hunt it. And so it was my buddy's dad who was taking care of the farm and all permission would go through him. Okay. I go out there and I pull my truck down onto this lane. I walk around, I get up in my tree, I'm hunting, I see my deer. I watch another hunter walk a field edge in. The next night I go by that guy's tree stand just to take a look at it because I was told that there's nobody else hunting this property. A bucket of apples had been dumped out in front of this tree stand, illegal. Okay. So that night I went and hunted. The second night I come back and there's two guys that meet me at my truck. And they're like, and I just straight up introduce them. And the only thing I could see was the glow of their cigarettes, right? And I introduce myself. I go, hey, my name's Dan. I got permission to be on this farm from this person. He's the person in charge of this ground. And he told me that there's nobody else here. And he goes, and they tried to strong arm me. They got real close to me. Two guys, probably the same size as me. One guy had a pistol, like a revolver, in his belt, not even in a holster. And so I'm just like, what do I do? And so I just was like, hey, listen, I don't know what's going on. Or the guy goes, I've had permission here for 20 years. I've been hunting this farm for 20 years. And I said, well, you might need to reach out to this person because I don't think the landowner knows that you hunt here or anybody knows that you hunt here. And the guy, then that's when he started getting real testy. He's like, I've been hunting here this long and this. And I go, well, the landowner doesn't know you. He doesn't know that you're still hunting here. And so I felt threatened almost to a point. So I go to, you know, call me a rat or whatever you want. So I go to the landowner or to my buddy's dad and I go, hey, do you know this guy? And my buddy's dad is a Vietnam vet, or he's passed away, but he's a Vietnam vet, does not give a fuck about anything. Like you pull a gun to this guy's face, he would just laugh at you. Like he doesn't give a shit. He went through Vietnam. So he goes, you put a note on his dude's tree stand to call me. And so I typed up a note. I put it in a comic book sleeve. I duct taped it shut. And then I went and hung it on. I go, I typed it up full, like it was from my buddy's dad. And so I typed up the note that said, hey, currently you do not have permission to be on this property. If you want permission to be on this property, you need to call. And I put my buddy's dad's name, his phone number, and I taped it to his tree stand. My buddy's dad got a call a couple days after that. And that guy over the phone tried to strong arm my buddy's dad, saying, dude, I've been hunting here for so-and-so years. He didn't even know who the current landowner was, right? He just, and my buddy's grandpa, the landowner, had owned that farm for like 55, 60 years. He's like one of the first people who have ever in that area. The family came in, owned thousands and thousands of acres, and then, you know, slowly it goes away. But he was like 90 at the time, and he couldn't even tell the buddy, started strong arming my buddy's dad. And my buddy's dad's just like, 19 years, huh? Well, you no longer have permission to be on that property. Like, I'm sure if that guy was cool and just been like, oh yeah, I'm sorry for any type of inconvenience, whatever, he would have let him go. But my buddy's dad kicked that guy off of the farm. And I kind of had archery season to myself now. Now I wouldn't have done anything if that dude was chill and cool. Right. I'm just like, cause I've run into people before where out on the woods and go out in the woods and the landowner's like, you should be the only archery hunter here. I'm like, okay, cool. Run into someone archery hunting. And then they go back and I talk to the landowner and the landowner's like, oh yeah, I completely forgot about that guy. He's fine. He has permission. And then you have good conversations and you have a good standing with everybody now. But when the landowner says, I'm doing things the right way, the landowner says you are one of X number of people to be on the farm. And then you find out there's like 40 other people on the farm. And then you go back to the landowner saying, well, I ran into so-and-so this year, because they want you to do that. And then they start kicking people off. Well, people have gotten pissed at me for that before. And I'm just trying to be safe. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I've had a guy on trail camera walking up to our food plot, bow in hand, had zero permission to be there. It wasn't really near the property line. He was hunting on the property line and followed a deer trail. Mm-hmm. And we ended up finding his deer stand, found out who it was, got a hold of him. And his response to us was, well, how much land do you need to hunt?
Yeah.
And come to find out, he owned 150 acres of his own and was hunting another property and was asking us, you know, how much do we need?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't care if it's 1 acre or 1,000 acres. If you're not doing it the right way, you're not doing it the right way.
Right.
And so, like, that's the thing, especially as some of these landowners get older and they're not able to go back into the farm as far anymore. Dude, there's a lot of scumbags who take advantage of some of these people. Like, if they become immobile or they get older and they don't care about getting back and kind of knowing everything that's going on. A lot of the farmers, you know, like, have cash rent now, where another farmer will cash rent from the landowner or have cattle on it. And in the past, I've had some things where they think that they're the actual landowner instead of the actual landowner. And they start to flex on me. And I'm like, hey, dude, I don't need your permission to be here. I got permission from the actual landowner. And so you can be mad at me, but I'm still coming out here to hunt. Right. And so, a whole bunch of different, or, you know, trail cameras start to go missing and, you know, they're just like, well, that sucks, but don't put trail cameras up anymore because I don't care enough to go through the drama of finding out who is doing all the damage here. Yeah. And so the landowners that I know that I hunt on, I think all they really want is someone on their property to tell them about what's going on their property because they can't be there anymore, or they don't have, you know, they're not on the property as much as they want. And they just want someone to fill them in. What'd you see? Oh, you saw baby foxes. That's cool. Oh, there's more turkeys this year. Cool. Or, you know, hey, is it wet down in there in the bottom? Yep. It's wet. Cool. You know, and you just talk to them. Like, and other people in the past, it just seems like they take advantage of some of these people.
Yeah, that's been the biggest ruiner of access in my experience. It's just bad previous experiences with people. And those people acted like it was their land. They just didn't give a shit and were trying to tell off the landowner.
Yeah, exactly. And then people get comfortable over X number of years, and then they don't think that they need to check in every single year with the landowner. And the next thing you know, the landowner forgets about them, and then they don't, and then something happens, and it's just, I don't know, just, and that's the thing, like, constant communication. I'm always every year touching base with some of these people and making sure that they, you know, they know I'm there. I know that they know, and who else, like, if there's any other people on that property that I need to know about. Cause especially if, you know, I don't hunt a lot of gun seasons, but if I'm out there with my kids and there's another hunter out there who's not wearing blaze orange or is going some, you know, like, whose truck is this? I should know there. Cause number one, I don't want to ruin their hunt. I don't want them to ruin my hunt. I also don't want bullets getting flung at my kid. And so it's important for all parties to know what's going on those properties.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had permission on a property that was being sold. It was listed and I knocked on the door because I had seen the listing was like 90 days. Like it was over 90 days. And I was like, maybe it's like a sell real quick. Knocked, got permission. And I was like, if you sell it, or if you know somebody's going to be there, like, looking at it, I said, just let me know and I won't be there. Mm-hmm. And I had it for like the first 10 days of the season. And they were like, hey, just accepted an offer. Part of the offer was they have immediate access to the property. And I was like, well, okay. I appreciate the 10 days, but I've actually knocked on three properties that have in the process of being sold and only got permission on one, but it was very unique.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I've used land sales websites to click on it, knowing I'm not going to buy it, but looking at, you know, oh, look at all the big bucks on the trail camera here that they're using as marketing material to sell, and going and knocking on neighbors' doors and getting access to it. So I know there's good quality deer in the area. Some people may think that's shiesty, but I don't give a shit, right? Like, I'm not breaking any laws or doing anything wrong. I've gotten access to one of the biggest names in the hunting industry next a property that borders theirs. And I mean, why not? Oh, you're only hunting next to that farm because of who they are. 100%. Yes. I don't know. Like, what do you want me to say? Make up some excuse. No, they have hundreds of acres of food plots. I know that not every single buck is going to stay on their farm. And so I'm hunting a farm next to it. And I'm not hunting right on their fence line. I'm hunting terrain features and things like that. And come to find out, all of the people that touched their farm didn't necessarily like them that well. And so they were all for me coming on their property and bow hunting. They had a shotgun crew that would come through there, but bow hunting. Do you think archery are, so let me back up. Archery used to be my in. Like, I can remember the first years I knocked on people's doors. They would say, oh, you're going to try to bow hunt them? Yeah, good luck. Go for it. And that's how I'd get my access. Gun hunting, hard no, right? Absolutely not. We have a shotgun crew that comes through. No, I already got gun hunters. Do you think archery is still an in like it used to be, or has it gotten to the point where all hunting is now harder to get access to, permission on?
I think it's the best way to get in. I think it's getting tougher with crossbows growing and getting more popular. The guys that used to just shoot firearm, or even kids who can't draw back, you know, a legal bow yet, can set up a bog pod and use a crossbow. But I think archery is still the top way in, you know, for permission like this, because some of those older guys are just gun hunters, or they have, you know, the family, you know, deer camp, deer drives that come in during firearm. And if I'm like, look, I just want to be there the first 4 or 5 weeks. You can rest a week before firearm. In Indiana, you can hunt with a bow the whole season. You don't have to stop when other seasons come in, you know, when firearm or muzzleloader come in. But I'm like, hey, when those other seasons are in and they're there, I'll back out.
Yeah. I mean, Iowa is Iowa, right? I just happened to grow up and live in a state where nobody used to hunt it. Nobody cared about it. It became popular. The big bucks started coming out of there, and I used to be able to get a ton of access. And now I it's very, very hard to get any type of permission access, unless you possibly know of a person. Right. And so the one farm I've had access to since 2007 or 8 or 6 or something like that, 6. And then this new farm, I got permission because I knew a guy who knew a guy, and that's it. Right. And so, other than that, any time I've ever knocked on a door or anything like that, it's been no, probably in the last 5 years. So there are some things that I need to do different. I might need to adjust my standards maybe a little bit, as far as what is good and what is bad as far as land is concerned, or what I'm looking for is caliber of animal, or am I just looking to be able to hunt anymore? Right. So, are there any other little tips or tricks or tactics that you use, in a conversation or strategy of looking at farms to hunt
I use like Willing to Help as a big thing for me, you know, whether it's I've offered help cut up and pull out down trees, clean up properties, pick up trash, whether it's in the ditch or, you know, in their property, help keep out trespassers. I've offered to post their property if they want it posted, fix fences. I mean, that helps. And then just the biggest thing is just being friendly.
Yeah.
You know, you may not be enjoying the conversation 25 minutes in, but I guarantee if you're still talking 25 minutes in, that other person is. Because there's plenty of people who are going to say, no, get the hell off my property, and they're going to turn around.
Right. Exactly. If you're talking to someone for 25 minutes, the longer the conversation, my guess is the more likelihood you have of getting told no or yes, excuse me. Yeah. Yes. Permission property is slowly going away. But do you think it's still worthwhile to see something to attempt it these days?
I do. It helps that next generation. You know, we can't just keep closing up property. If they've said no to me or if I don't even ask, the next generation, you know, your kids, the kids that I help with, aren't going to go or aren't even going to feel like, well, if dad couldn't do it, then I can't do it. You know, it's just giving them that opportunity. Even if it's a 5-acre parcel or a 150 acre parcel, you know?
Right. Right. I'm just, I think moving forward, I'm going to play the kid card a lot. And even if it only gives me access to the youth season, you know what I mean? The youth season. I think that that's going to be a card that I'm going to play. And if I get my kid, because honestly, that's what I'm looking for. And if my kid hunts on a farm just for youth season for X number of years, at least then he might have the opportunity to continue on that farm after he's 16, 17, you know, after the youth season days are over. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
So I like that idea, not even thinking about myself. And maybe that would come, you know, hey, dad, can you help me drag a deer out? Yeah, dude, I'll be there. I'm on my way, you know, something close. So, and I think the other thing that I want to mention here, I'm not going to mention, I'm going to ask you, how often do you look at properties for permission that don't look like they're good from the road?
All the time.
Why?
Those are the ones that fewer people ask about. Mm-hmm. I've found those to be hidden gems. Mm-hmm. You know, the ugly property, you know, down trees, the old barns with grapevines taking them over. Those are the ones that are going to be thick and gnarly in spots that the deers love. And that people are like, you know, down here they have a food plot. Let me try that one.
Yeah.
Well, no, if somebody's putting in the effort to put in a food plot, they're putting in the effort to hunt it like you did. I'll hunt the property next to it. You know, the shitty one or, I'm trying to get it even just a couple fence rows.
Yeah.
Where it's ag in between two large, you know, wooded lots. If I can hunt the fence row, cause I know come the rut or, you know, that late October, early November, the deer are going to use that to travel. I love those ugly spots.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. It's probably something I need to get back and do, right? I need to get more because there's other hunters who hunt youth season now on, for deer hunting on my main farm. My other farm, I'll probably take my boy to, I'll let him skip some school so we can go down there this youth season and go and hunt. But outside of that, I think I need to make it a priority, not just for me, but for my kids to get some additional permission to hunt or start thinking about things like taking my kids out of state to hunt, which sucks that you have to do that. But I still think that's a pretty cool experience and opportunity to go to a different state that may have over-the-counter options.
Yeah. And another thing about door knocking, you learn who else is out there. Who's hunting around you. I've had some people just be straight up forward, you know, that they, I only have does, man. I don't have any bucks, you know, until the end of the rut, or, you know, this is what I, the caliber of deer I'm seeing. And you get good intel with that. People just being good neighbors and talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you get this and it's just like, yeah, man, I'm just here to fill the freezer, the nonchalant. And then you go on the farm and there's like 40 trail cameras out there. And you're like, dudes don't do this for does to fill the freezer, right? There's something else out here that this guy knows about. And now I can, you know, play the game as well. So, when, after you gain permission on a farm, is there any type of like thank you or gift or something that you give or tell the landowner?
So I'm always in communication. I let them know what I'm going to be out there. If that's one of the things they want to know, I check in, you know, before and after every season. And I always give them venison. I'll ask if they want something specific, you know, roast steaks, ground. And sometimes if they're like, I don't eat venison, you keep it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll make something from that and give it to them. A lot of people have been like, man, that's really good. I remember when my mom made it, it was a tough steak. You know, it was real tough and chewy. I was like, let me get you a recipe. Always giving some of that back helps. I mean, I've always offered. People don't always take it up, you know, yard chores, stuff like that, mowing. But I always try and give some kind of thank you, even if it's just reaching out at the end of the season with a thank you card or something.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff they remember and appreciate come next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Doug, I think I got to go do some door knocking. And I don't think, although I think door knocking is extremely difficult these days, I don't think it's dead yet. I don't think it's dead, especially in like a state like Indiana, dude. Like, there's not a ton of deer hunters in Indiana compared to Michigan or Pennsylvania or things like that. It's probably pretty tough in those types of states. But when like states like Iowa, states like maybe Kansas, Nebraska, maybe a little bit of Ohio, but that's still a lot of hunters. You know, like Indiana as well. I still think there's an opportunity, and don't skip the properties that just don't look good, because you know just as well as I do, some CRP patch that runs through a drainage, through a cornfield, a big old boy could run through there during the rut. So don't count them out. So, but dude, I really appreciate you coming back on, sharing your experience, talking about the door knocking and whatnot. And thank you very much for taking time out of your day to do this, man. Good luck this upcoming season.
Hey, thanks. You too. Good luck door knocking.
Yeah, right.